Hello, this is Lee Gaines with the News Gazette, dated January 12, 2018. We will begin today's reading on the front page with the article headlined UI Grad Fighting for His Dream by Julie Wirth. With his newly minted bachelor's degree, University of Illinois graduate Jamie Nolasco has big plans. Apply to law school. Become a public interest attorney and work for a nonprofit where he can make a difference. But his future depends on lawmakers in Washington, D.C., reaching some sort of compromise on immigration. Nolasco, 23, is one of 42,000 young Americans in Illinois and an estimated 800,000 nationwide known as Dreamers, children brought to this country illegally by their parents. The 2012 Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals program offered them temporary legal status and a social security number so they could get a work permit and access to a decent job. But President Donald Trump announced September 5th that he would end the program on March 5th. Nolasco applied for DACA status in June, but hasn't received a decision from the government, leaving him in limbo. It hasn't stopped him from speaking out. Sporting a jacket and bow tie, Nolasco joined more than 100 other Dreamers this week in Washington, lobbying legislators to approve a permanent fix for DACA by January 19th, the deadline for a federal budget resolution, and not wait until the protections expire in March. Several senators said Thursday a bipartisan compromise was within reach. Though that was before Trump's latest incendiary comments on immigration from Haiti and Africa. There are folks who are losing their DACA permits today. There are some who are losing them tomorrow or the week after, approximately 122 per day, Nolasco said, quoting statistics from the Center for American Progress. Under Trump's order, DACA recipients could renew their permits if they were scheduled to expire before March 5th, but they had to do it by October 5th. Any that expired after March 5th could not be renewed. Quote, "People are losing their work, their jobs, potentially their lives," Nolasco said. "They are at risk for deportation." Champaign immigration attorney Matt Kuning said he saw an increase in DACA clients seeking to renew their status between September 5th and October 5th, and he knew of one woman who didn't renew her permit in time. Others have sought advice about how to obtain legal status, given that they weren't going to have DACA protections anymore, he said. He wasn't aware of anyone being deported because they lost their DACA status. Quote, "I think that it's unfortunate that there's not a permanent legal status for the people who qualify for DACA," Kuning said. "This is a class of people who have largely grown up in the United States, who have attended school in the United States. Many of them don't speak Spanish as well as they speak English." DACA is open to undocumented immigrants who were younger than 31 as of June 15, 2012, when President Barack Obama approved the program. They had to have arrived in the United States before their 16th birthday and before June 15, 2007. Nolasco was a toddler when his mother brought him to the U.S. from Mexico City in the 1990s. His grandfather, the family breadwinner, had died shortly after Nolasco was born, and his mom just wanted a better future for me, he said. She didn't have a sense of stability back home. He doesn't remember anything about Mexico and speaks English better than Spanish. "I'm actually brushing up on Spanish," he said. Nolasco and his mom, who lives in Chicago, paid his tuition out of pocket, and he wasn't able to apply for financial aid. He put off applying for DACA status because of the nearly $500 cost. "Our focus was paying for my school," he said. "It was definitely a big struggle for me to even attend, let alone graduate." At the UI, he was active with iCause, a group that helps undocumented immigrants, and also worked as a voter registration coordinator for State Rep. Carol Ammons. Nolasco said he's never been to Mexico and would have nowhere to go if he were sent back. Quote, "This is my home," he said. "Ever since I stepped foot in this country, I've shown nothing but patriotic love for this country. I pledged the Pledge of Allegiance. I attended a public university. I do community service. I'm American by definition, except I lack a piece of paper." He hopes by sharing his story, he can persuade legislators to take action. "There has to be a face to this story," he said. The DACA advocates were organized by FWD.US, a bipartisan organization founded by tech companies to promote immigration reform and other issues. Nolasco spent Monday through Thursday in Washington meeting with members of Illinois' congressional delegation, including Democratic Senators Dick Durbin and Tammy Duckworth, and U.S. Representative Rodney Davis from Taylorville. Staff members for Davis said he is committed to finding a permanent fix, Nolasco said. He was buoyed by the reports of bipartisan compromise this week, saying there seems to be, quote, an overall consensus to fix DACA. A federal judge this week also temporarily blocked plans to end DACA while a lawsuit challenging Trump's decision moves ahead. U.S. District Judge William Alsup in San Francisco said the nearly 690,000 DACA recipients must retain their work permits and protection from deportation in the meantime, and those who failed to renew their status last fall should be allowed to do so. However, he said the government does not have to process any new applicants. Kuning said there will almost certainly be an emergency appeal of the ruling to the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals, which has ruled against Trump on other immigration matters. That means the issue will likely wind up before the U.S. Supreme Court, he said. Kuning said he's worked with about 40 DACA clients over time and estimated there are hundreds in Champaign-Urbana. Nolasco said DACA isn't a, quote, giveaway, but a merit system with rigorous requirements for people who are motivated to attend college, serve in the military, or start a business. It's meant to incorporate those who have been marginalized in society, he said. The title of the next article I'll be reading is News Gazette Media to Remain Home for UI Sports. Broadcasts of University of Illinois athletics will remain on WDWS 1400-AM and WHMS 97.5-FM for at least the next 4 years. On Thursday, the UI's athletic department and media rights holder Learfield's Fighting Illini Sports Properties announced the extension of the broadcast relationship. The program's athletic events have been carried by News Gazette Media for more than 30 years. Quote, "News Gazette Media and the University of Illinois are two long-standing institutions in the community," News Gazette Media CEO and publisher John Reed said. "We've obviously enjoyed a very good working relationship for a number of years now. The agreement includes all football, men's and women's basketball, volleyball, baseball, and select softball games. The stations will also air the weekly coaches show." Quote, "We are pleased to continue our longtime relationship with News Gazette Media and radio stations WDWS and WHMS," Illinois Athletic Director Josh Whitman said. "Fighting Illini fans in the Champaign-Urbana area have known for decades that those stations are the radio homes to our games, and this new agreement will increase the presence of our programs even more. We appreciate the efforts of Learfield and News Gazette Media to put together this partnership." WDWS and WHMS will broadcast more than 150 live events each year. Quote, "Fighting Illini sports is fundamentally a part of our DNA," Reed said. "Whether it's radio, print, or digital, we cover Illinois sports like nobody else. This is just 4 more years of us doing what we have always done." The contract was put out to bid to interested radio operators in the market. At the end of the process, Learfield and the Illinois Athletic Department decided News Gazette Media was the preferred partner. Quote, "It's very much a three-pronged partnership," Reed said. The next article I'll be reading is titled, "Holton Endorsed by Farm Bureau." Just as the Champaign County Chamber of Commerce did a month ago, the County Farm Bureau's Political Involvement Committee has endorsed Republican Gordy Hulton to become the first county executive. Hulton, currently the county clerk, is unopposed in the March 20th Republican primary for the county executive nomination. Darlene Klopel of Urbana is the lone Democratic candidate for the position. It's likely that Klopel and Hulton will face off in November to become county executive, a position that county voters approved by referendum in November 2016. Quote, "We have a long and outstanding working relationship with Gordy," said Chris Murray, chair of the Farm Bureau's Political Involvement Committee. "He understands the issues that matter to our membership and is a committed partner. We agree with the priorities he's identified for county government and are excited to support his campaign." When the Chamber of Commerce announced its support for Hulton in December, the group said its political fund would provide the Hulton campaign with at least $5,000. His campaign received a $5,000 check a few days later. Brad Ukin, the manager of the County Farm Bureau, said Thursday that campaign money may be coming from his organization as well. Quote, "Is there a plan for it? Not necessarily a plan, but it could be an option," Ukin said. "As of today, we're starting with the first step, which is the announcement of our endorsement." Ukin said the Political Involvement Committee made the endorsement without interviewing the candidates. Quote, "Our committee met several times and discussed what our vision and goals were for the position and came to the conclusion that Gordy probably was the best fit to meet that vision," he said. Ukin said the Farm Bureau intends to hold meetings throughout the county beginning later this month in Rantoul to talk about the county exec to make sure that people fully understand what the roles and responsibility are as they are laid out in statute. The Farm Bureau and Chamber of Commerce worked with Hulton and State Senator Chapin Rose in 2016 to get the county executive question on the ballot. Quote, "Since we are part of the group behind it, we want to make sure that voters going into the election and when it's actually in place next December have a good understanding of what this position is going to be," Ukin said. "We think that that's part of our responsibility." Hulton said he was honored and grateful to get the Farm Bureau endorsement. "I look forward to working with them and their members in partnership as Champaign County's first county executive," he said. The next article I'll be reading is titled, "Ex-Parole Officer Acquitted of Fraud." A Danville man fired from his job as a parole agent for allegedly not working while being paid has been acquitted of criminal charges. 3 years after the Illinois Department of Corrections launched an investigation against Stanley Orndaugh, 49, a Champaign County jury went Thursday acquitted him of charges of wire fraud and official misconduct that resulted from that internal review. Fired in August 2015 after what his attorney, Steve Beckett of Urbana, branded as false accusations, Orndorff is hoping to be reinstated to the position he held with the Corrections Department for 12 years. He has been driving a truck while waiting for his pending grievance with the state to be resolved. The acquittal of the Class 3 felony charges could expedite that. In a 3.5-day trial before Judge Tom DiFanis, prosecutors Michael O'Brien and Lisa Hennelly from the Illinois Attorney General's office painted a picture of the rural Danville man as one who was cheating the system by misreporting his contacts with parolees. Beckett countered that Orndorff was the victim of Bakke technology and his own mistakes at entering data. It took the 7 men and 5 women on the jury about 3 hours to decide whom to believe. Testimony revealed that Orndorff was assigned to the Champaign office in 2014 after working for several years as a parole agent and supervisor in Chicago. Prior to becoming a parole agent in 2004, Orndorff had worked at the Stateville prison near Joliet for about 4 years. Orndorff's last supervisor in the Champaign office, Todd Bailey, who is now retired, testified that on January 10, 2015, he and another supervisor conducted surveillance on Orndorff, watching him leave his rural Danville home but head in a direction opposite where the men expected he would go. Bailey said they later received approval from a supervisor in Springfield to put a GPS device in the trunk of Orndorff's state-issued car, without Orndorff's knowledge, to keep track of his movements while on the job. Under questioning by Beckett, Bailey agreed that he and Orndorff were not good friends and said he did not recall asking Orndorff if he was interested in a commander position. Bailey said he had never disciplined Orndorff and had no meetings with him before launching the surveillance of his activity while on the clock. The charges against Orndorff centered on the dates of March 6th, 10th, and 20th, 2015. Prosecutors allege that on those days, he committed wire fraud by reporting through the state's computer system that he had contacts with parolees at times when the GPS device in his car showed he was at a trailer in the Fountain Valley Mobile Home Park in Rantoul. The official misconduct charge alleged that he committed wire fraud while acting in his capacity as a public employee. The state built its case around the days and times stamped on Orndorff's computer reports of parolee contacts, which he had to enter into his laptop from the field, compared with the data taken from the GPS that showed where his car was on those days. GPS expert Kelvin Helmick of Arizona-based CoverTrack, who was paid by the state for his testimony, told the jury where Orndorff's car was at different times on the three dates in March, testifying that Orndorff was at the Rantoul Mobile Home Park. Norma Benelli Zook, owner of the mobile home park, testified that she knew Orndorff from his contacts with a former tenant there. She said she frequently saw Orndorff working in his car at a Casey's in Rantoul and offered to let him use a vacant trailer in her park to do his reporting. She added that on those three March days, none of the parolees that Orndorff reported having contact with were living in her complex. The state also called one of Orndorff's parolees, who said he did not believe that Orndorff had visited him on March 6, as Orndorff reported. In Orndorff's defense, Beckett had two co-workers testify about the way agents do their work in the field and Orndorff's good reputation for honesty. Two parolees also testified that Orndorff had visited them in March. He also had William Brown, a University of Illinois employee with 25 years of experience in geographic information systems, talk about the interpretation of the data collected by the GPS. In closing arguments, Assistant Attorney General Lisa Hennelly said that Orndorff got caught cheating the system. Quote, his scheme was to make it look like he was doing his job, she said, walking the jury through Orndorff's entries on the state computer system for times that the GPS indicated he was in the trailer park. But Beckett argued that jurors should use their common sense about delays that can happen on the internet when data is sent from one point to another. Quote, we know there are delays, particularly in wireless communications, he said. We have also urged the jurors not to convict Orndorff for what could have been simple errors in picking the wrong option on a drop-down menu about the kind of contact he had with a client. Quote, mistakes are not fraud. Mistakes are mistakes, he argued. They want you to assume the entries are false. They haven't proved they are false. They have proved there is this absolute misunderstanding about the timestamps. Beckett asked the jurors to think about Bailey and the other supervisor's decision to launch an investigation into their coworker, including putting a GPS on Orndorff's car. Quote, there's something going on. Stan worked out of Chicago. He came to Champaign. There's something going on, he said. He urged the jurors to look at Orndorff's other records from March 2015, which showed that he contacted one parolee in the hospital and inquired about the progress of another's pregnancy. Quote, he's not a very good speller, but he cares about his people. He is doing his job, Beckett argued. In rebuttal, Assistant Attorney General O'Brien said he agreed with Beckett that something is going on. Quote, this guy didn't do his job, he said. What he was doing was sitting in Fountain Valley doing nothing, collecting a paycheck when he's supposed to be out doing his job. The title of the next story I'll be reading is Loft in Champaign Closing. Women's clothing retailer Loft is closing its location at Champaign's Marketplace Mall at the end of the month. Its last day will be January 27. We can confirm the closing, said Marissa Allenby, spokeswoman for the mall's owner, GGP. Loft, originally known as Ann Taylor Loft, has more than 650 stores in North America and is part of Ann Incorporated, the parent company of the Ann Taylor stores. Ann Incorporated did not respond to a request for comment. Loft opened at the mall in 2005 and is located near Dick's Sporting Goods. The title of the next story I'll be reading is Ex-Paxton Police Chief Sues, Claims Firing Illegal. A lawsuit filed in federal court by former Paxton Police Chief Bob Bain's attorney alleges that the veteran officer was fired illegally by Mayor Bill Ingold last summer in retaliation for taking the city to court for overtime he believed he was owed. The 8-count complaint filed in U.S. District Court in Urbana by attorney Ron Langaker alleges that the mayor's August 29th termination of Bain's employment violated the Illinois Wage and Hour Act, which prohibits employers from retaliating against an employee for complaining to the employer about unpaid wages. The lawsuit also alleges the city violated the Fair Labor Standards Act, the Illinois Whistleblower Act, and the Illinois State Official and Employee Ethics Act by firing Bain as it did. Our feeling is that this is a retaliation cause of action, Langaker told the Ford County Record on Thursday. The lawsuit also alleges that the city violated its own ordinances by firing Bain without giving him written notice of the reasons he was being fired. The city also allegedly violated Bain's constitutional rights by never providing him a pre- or post-termination hearing, the lawsuit said. Bain's suit seeks the awarding of damages sufficient to compensate him for any economic losses suffered, attorney fees and costs incurred in filing the complaint, and punitive damages. Ingold, who along with all 8 Paxton aldermen are named as defendants in the complaint, said Thursday he had no comment on the suit, noting that, quote, "This is the first I've heard of it." City Attorney Mark Miller was not immediately available for comment. The mayor has never publicly disclosed why he fired Bain, who had been police chief since May 2006, saying only that, quote, "it was clear a change in leadership was needed." The timing of the firing, however, seems to indicate that it may be linked to Bain's taking the city, its mayor, and its comptroller/treasurer to court over years of unpaid overtime compensation, Langaker said. About 2 months before Bain was fired, a judge ruled in Ford County Circuit Court that the city would be required to pay Bain $1,190 in overtime he claimed he was owed. The ruling was in connection with a small claims complaint Bain filed, alleging the city owed him $6,848 in overtime pay for city council meetings he attended. Bain was fired while his small claims case was still pending. About 2 weeks after Bain was fired, the city attorney wrote a letter in response to Langaker's request for an explanation. Quote, "The correspondence claimed that a reason for Officer Bain's termination was that he had utilized the fax machine at the police department to submit a Freedom of Information Act request to the city requesting information supporting his small claims action against the city," Langaker's lawsuit said. The correspondence further characterized Bain's request for information to assist in his lawsuit, seeking reimbursement for years of unpaid overtime compensation from the city as a means to advance his own personal gain. According to Langaker's lawsuit, the September 13th letter further claimed that Bain had failed to comply with the directive from the mayor for Bain to provide copies of his employees' performance evaluation to 2 aldermen. In an August 18 memo to Bain, the mayor said that it was his understanding that Bain had not completed any evaluations on his officers despite being asked repeatedly to do so. He gave him an August 25th deadline to do so or face, quote, "reasonable discipline." While alleging that Bain failed to comply with the mayor's request, the city's September 13th letter also, quote, acknowledged that the evaluations had in fact been completed and provided by the deadline, Langeker's lawsuit noted. The next article I'll be reading is titled Gambling Cafe Robber Gets 10 Years. A Champagne man who admitted robbing a gambling cafe in May was sentenced to 10 years in prison earlier this week. Robert E. Turner, 35, who listed an address in the 1600 block of Gates Place, pleaded guilty Monday before Judge Tom DiFanis to a single count of robbery, admitting that on May 29th he entered Chelsea's Video Poker and Gaming at 2010 West Springfield Avenue and took cash from an employee. Assistant State's Attorney Troy Lozer said a second count of aggravated robbery, alleging that Turner demanded money from a 75-year-old man who was a customer, while indicating he had a gun, was dismissed. Lozer said no one actually saw a gun. Turner had handed a note to the employee demanding the cash. The note said if she complied, she would not be killed. Champaign police arrested Turner not far from the business. The employee and the customer identified him. He was also captured on video. Turner was given credit on his sentence for 224 days served. Lozer said Turner had prior convictions for drug delivery, credit card fraud, and aggravated battery. The next article I'll be reading is titled Man Gets Probation for Vehicle Break-In. Thomas Borough man, who admitted taking part in a vehicle break-in last fall in Rantoul, has been sentenced to 2 years of probation. Joseph Stowe, 20, was also ordered to perform 30 hours of public service, get a substance abuse evaluation, and pay $160 in restitution and more than $330 in court costs. He pleaded guilty to burglary, admitting that on November 3rd, he entered a car on Willow Pond Road intending to steal. In return for his guilty plea, another count of use of a forged credit card was dismissed. Stowe had no prior convictions, although records show he received court supervision in May for a misdemeanor criminal trespass to a vehicle, which happened in November 2016 in Rantoul. Stowe entered the guilty plea Thursday before Judge Roger Weber, who last week accepted a plea from a co-defendant to misdemeanor theft for a sentence of probation. He had no prior convictions. Charges of burglary and use of a forged credit card against a third defendant, Joshua Riggleman, 19, of Urbana, are unresolved. He's due back in court February 6th. Article I'll be reading is titled Parolee Going Back to Prison. A Champaign man who had a gun in his home at a time when he was on parole is headed back to prison. A jury took about 30 minutes Thursday to convict Andrew Bell, 23, whose last known address was in the 300 block of South Country Fair Drive, of unlawful use of weapons by a felon on parole and being an armed habitual criminal. Judge Heidi Ladd revoked Bell's bond since a prison sentence of between 6 and 30 years is mandated and set his sentence for February 21st. Both counts stemmed from a court-authorized search of Bell's apartment on April 28, 2016, according to Assistant State's Attorney Tim Sullivan. Detectives from the Champaign County Street Crimes Task Force found a loaded Glock 40 caliber handgun on top of a kitchen cabinet. Testing at the state crime lab revealed that Bell's DNA was on the gun. The detectives also found suspected heroin and cocaine in the apartment, but because the gun charges were stronger in terms of the state's ability to prove its case, Sullivan said he dismissed drug charges and proceeded to trial Wednesday on the weapons-related counts only. Bell was represented by Champaign attorney Dan Jackson. Bell also has another case pending, stemming from a November 2, 2016 arrest that involved suspected heroin and cocaine found in a vehicle in which Bell was a passenger. He is charged with possession with intent to deliver heroin and cocaine in that case. Court records show that Bell had prior convictions for burglary in 2012 and unlawful use of weapons in 2014 that qualified him to be charged as an armed habitual criminal. We'll take a short break now and come back with the second half hour of the News Gazette, dated January 12, 2018. Stay tuned.